Good evening, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media will keep their hands off of. And tonight, we're going to talk about this F-35 story because there's a lot of questions that we don't have answers to. And I feel like people are lying to us. Let us know what you think in the comments below. Are we being lied to about this mysterious crash, this mysterious disappearance, there's so many things. We're going to dive deep into this story tonight. Is it a false flag operation? Were they hacked? Is there a larger story at play here? We're going to get into all of it.
Plus, a new bill in Congress would ban the federal government from instating CBDCs, also ban them from creating monetary policy with your money and being your bank. That's kind of desirable. We're going to tell you why as that comes up.
We're also going to look at what is the next spot for a coup in Africa. What next country will basically the West aim to destabilize in Africa? We'll tell you, maybe there's a list of them, actually. We're going to dive deep into all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, welcome. Hope everyone is doing well. Good evening. Let us know where you're joining us from here. Let's see, someone in Hawaii. Someone says the Congo. We're taking votes on where they think the next coup will come from in Africa. Yeah, let us know. Let us know what your votes are on Africa.
I wonder about that word too, coup. You know, is it just decolonialization? Is that the same as a coup? Could we use that word, or is there a better word for what's happening?
Right, they'll call it a military coup. Or how about we're just throwing off the shackles of colonialization? We're saying, hey, the French, get out of here, stop stealing our resources. United States, get out of here, stop stealing all of our minerals and oil and gold and all of our other wealth. Yeah, that's
a good point. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
Do that.
We can't call it that.
That's
yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll think on that word. Let's think about that. Something else to think about? You want to talk about the newsletter?
I do indeed want to tell them about the newsletter because it's the best newsletter in the world and it's totally free and you should sign up for it. I mean, it's free and it brings you tons of value in the morning over your cup of coffee. We work really hard on it in the morning and write about five or six big stories. And this is the first thing that Natalie does in the morning is get her coffee and dives deep into writing the newsletter. And I go in and add some additional edits and things like that. But it's a family effort, and we really try to make it so you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee and bring a lot of value to your day. But it's also a way for us to stay connected to you because God knows these platforms love to deplatform people. That's
yes.
a lot of that has been going around in the past 24 hours, blocking, independent media. And one way for us to stay connected to you is through our newsletter. So just go to redacted.inc. Put in your email address, you'll receive a welcome email from me, Clayton, at redacted.inc, and just drag it over to your inbox and make sure we're on your VIP list. Google actually labels us as dangerous. So Gmail has labeled our newsletters dangerous, which I love. That really makes me happy, actually. So we are not dangerous. We are a good newsletter. And again, you can sign up for it and receive it first thing in the morning. Redacted.inc is the place to go.
All right. Someone says I look like anti-Chucky in these overalls.
Anti-Chucky?
I guess Chucky wears overalls like this. And
right.
I'm like,
you're Chucky?
Not. I don't look.
This is your Halloween costume?
I guess.
You're nega Chucky.
Nega Chucky. So the newsletter, yes, you can read in 5 minutes. I'm going to show you something else you cannot read in 5 minutes. We're going to, in the next couple of days, start talking about some locals-only content, one of which is a book club. So we're going to talk about just books since we're such avid readers, and we've decided that we'll pick at least a book every so often and then talk about it in a live locals only chat. This month, I've picked up this book. So if you want to get a head start, you cannot read this in 5 minutes. It's called Turtles All the Way Down. It's about vaccine science and myths. It's interesting. This book was printed in 2019 by two Israeli authors and has been since reprinted. The authors decided to remain anonymous because so often when people don't like what is said, they attack the person. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Does that sound like something that Western media has begun to do? And so we're going to dive into the content. If you'd like to read it along with me, this is a book that's highly recommended by people who have been critical of the way that vaccines have been rolled out in recent pandemics, if you know what I mean. And so join me if you'd like to read this. I probably will.
So we should tell people where the book club will be. It'll be on our redacted community. So just go over to redacted.inc, and there on the right side of your screen, you can join our locals community and become a Redacted Rebel Plus member and become part of our community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute bookmark, not required.
Yeah.
This is Hermione bookmark.
All right.
You like that?
I do.
Okay.
You ready?
I am.
All right. Well, let's dive into it. What really happened to that missing F-35? Three separate mysterious military crashes in the past few weeks. Was it simply just mechanical failure? Was it hacked by a nefarious foreign government that we need to go to war with immediately to stop them from doing this? The timing of it seems really impressive, doesn't it? That just as Volodymyr Zelensky is about to arrive in Washington, D.C. to ask for more money in the war effort. So timing really could be at play here. Is the United States preparing us for a massive false flag operation? Number of sources I've been speaking to over the past few weeks are very concerned that the U.S. government is prepping us for a false flag, something big on the scale of perhaps a 9/11. That would literally throw us into chaos and force us to mobilize in some sort of massive war effort or something else. So all of these things are on the table here. Pushing us to war with Russia, a hack that took down these airplanes, who knows?
But, China.
But yeah, or China, something like that.
On the heels of Mark Milley saying the Chinese spy balloon was neither Chinese nor spying.
Right.
So this is interesting timing.
So keep awake, everyone, is all I want to say. Keep awake and question everything. Question everything that these people are telling you right now. And boy, are we going to question some stuff tonight. So let's go through what we know right now about this F-35 and what we don't. First, the F-35, of course, is the biggest boondoggle in American military history. It is the most expensive and one of the most advanced jets in the United States military. The project has been delayed and delayed and delayed, and false starts and mistakes and fixes and things that need to be tweaked. And oh my gosh, each plane costs north of $140 million, according to the data that I've been looking at through Congress. And CNN says the entire F-35 program costs north of $1.7 trillion, and it's still not fully operational. So CNN is saying this. You know it's bad. And on Sunday, one of them went missing near Charleston, South Carolina. We know this, of course, because Joint Base Charleston issued this tweet about it. The tweet heard around the world, and it led to many, many memes as a result of it. We are working with the Marine Corps Air Station Base Beaufort to locate an F-35 that was involved in, quote, a mishap. A mishap. Just a little mishap. And call, if you find this F-35, call our phone number. Like a lost puppy.
I guess, isn't that kind of funny? Like, all they would have had to done is put like an Apple AirTag on it, you know, and they'd find it. Like, they don't have technology better than an Apple AirTag to find a jet.
I mean, look, I was looking for my Apple AirTags. I brought my keys around here somewhere, but I have an Apple AirTag, a $35 Apple AirTag, that can locate my keys or my missing wallet, for crying out loud, down to like a 1 foot radius, I can find the damn thing. A $140 million aircraft can't be found. I don't buy it for a second. More than 24 hours later, it took more than 24 hours later, they might have found the missing aircraft. Watch.
Just into us on that missing F-35 jet. It turns out a debris field has in fact been found 2 hours north, I should say, of Joint Base Charleston in South Carolina. I want to bring back Courtney Cuby, who's got an update for us on this. What do we know?
Well, not much so far. That seems to be the theme of this entire story as it's unfolded. But we do know that the U.S. military is confirming that there is some sort of a debris field. Again, it's about 2 hours north of Joint Base Charleston. It's in a very rural area. But that's really all we know. They're not even saying with certainty that this is absolutely the F-35.
Oh, yeah, we don't even know. So we think we got it, but we really don't know. Don't worry, because it crashed in South Carolina. You can tell it's an airplane because there's some burned grass and a few pieces of debris, just like Flight 93 in Pennsylvania.
Here's like literally in the shape of an airplane, like the way Goofy goes out a building.
Yeah.
Right? In the shape of Goofy, the exit hole of a wall.
Because airplanes definitely, when they do fall out of the sky, they fall straight down.
Right.
Straight down. Exactly.
So, yeah, here is some of the footage of what they think. And according to, you know, where this thing may have, like, landed, I don't know. Does this look like an airline crash to you? I mean, any kind of jet crash to you? Maybe. They say that this is the site. They think this is, and they think that they have the craft. They don't know. But this is where the story gets way more interesting. The Washington Post quoted Jeremy Huggins, who is a spokesman at the Joint Base Charleston, who said that the F-35's transponder was not working. Was not working. That's according to the Washington Post. Now, CNN, though, has a different take on it. CNN is wondering not if it wasn't working. CNN reports that the transponder may have been purposely switched off, which would have been disabling the tracking of the aircraft to the air traffic control towers. Why, maybe it says, had it been switched off?
Like a game of hide and seek?
What was the mission it was on that you would turn off the transponder?
Wonder if the same company makes that transponder that makes the cameras that were on Epstein's cell, you know, that just happened to...
they happened to go off in those particular minutes. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah,
mostly reliable ink. We're mostly
reliable. It's a great company. Own a lot of stock in mostly reliable ink. So why would someone switch off the transponder on a stealth aircraft? Well, one answer is you don't want to be tracked due to the sensitive nature of the mission that you're on. But wait a second. This is a stealth aircraft, which is already hidden to foreign radar and tracking. So turning off the transponder really only hides you from your own people back home. One military pilot told me today that civilians can see military aircraft if they switch over to the SSR radar or the secondary surveillance radar. The range of transponders are limited, of course, we know that, and they work on line of sight, and it depends on altitude, a number of factors involved in transponders communicating with the pinging back and forth to make sure, you know, what's your craft? Let us know. Back and forth radar calls, transponder signals. So was this jet supposed to be involved in a secret mission meant to look at something else? A false flag operation to carry out something against the American people? We don't know. But one source who is a former military pilot who specializes in radar and stealth technology told me that this aircraft was set to carry out such an attack before, if it was supposed to carry out one of these attacks before takeoff, then any black box, transponder, or other identification features like the IFF or the SIF, the identification of a friend or foe or special identification feature, could have very likely been disabled on purpose or shut off to enable that pilot to fly invisibly with regards to radar and electronic monitoring.
Invisible to their own side?
Well, yeah, because why would you want civilian air traffic control towers seeing the particular aircraft that's about to carry out something,
mm-hmm.
right? Fewer eyeballs on what they're planning. You know, who the hell knows? But we're not getting answers is the point. And it's all very mysterious as we dive more deeply into this, because this would allow this mission to not be tracked to anyone giving orders for such an attack, whatever it happens to be. Of course, the transponder needs electricity to run, and it would shut off in the event that the aircraft loses electricity. So we know that from transponder technology, it would shut off and wouldn't work if there was an electrical failure on the aircraft. Okay, perhaps that's what happened here. But the F-35 has multiple independent backup battery systems and electrical supplies so that never happens. The main system, they have two more backup batteries in addition to the main system. And here you can see Saft batteries, which actually makes the batteries and boasts how incredibly powerful they are and how they protect against redundancy, these types of problems. Here, quoting right from the manufacturer's website that makes these batteries. Among the F-35's groundbreaking features is its battery. It's the first military aircraft with a lithium-ion backup battery for mission-critical roles, such as providing emergency power for the F-35's flight control surfaces. The technology will change the way the military aircraft are made by providing high-power backup with much lower weight. And it goes on.
Brought to you on the backs of workers in the Congo.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all three independent electrical systems stopped working. I guess that's what we're being led to believe. that all three of them stop working. Therefore, maybe the transponder was shut off because of an electrical problem. Like, these are the things that would need to happen in order for the transponder to fail because of an electrical outage. I just want you to understand how many electrical systems are built into the F-35. So if it wasn't a power failure, then why would this happen? And according to another source I spoke with today, there's an emergency transponder built into the F-35 that would activate underneath the ejection seat as well. So two transponders and three electrical systems, basically. Two redundant electrical systems on top of the main.
So that's another looming question, is we're not being told who the pilot was that ejected. We're just told that he's fine, right? We have no update about that. Now, I don't know if this is still the case, but it used to be that when a pilot ejected, that ended their career. Right.
Used to be.
Yeah, is that still the case?
No, that's not still the case.
Okay. But it's still like a very jarring thing to do on a human body.
It is. And apparently, according to the reports, this pilot is recovering, is in the hospital and is in stable condition. Okay. But no, it will not end your career now. And there are, in fact, many people who have ejected that almost go right back to flying with modern ejection seats. So it's not as traumatic on the body as it was for, say, Senator John McCain back in the day. So the CNN transponder part of this story is very mysterious. It's made all the more mysterious, though, when you consider the F-35 is always connected to satellites and is arguably one of the most connected pieces of military equipment we own, the most advanced ever built. In fact, even Lockheed Martin's own promotional materials boast that fact. Watch.
Situational awareness, you say. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can't find it with the equipment and that thing. We can't find the damn thing.
So my first question is, did you notice in there that it said space, like as one of the places that this thing can go? Like it was saying, you know, like that was in the list, was space.
So yeah, F-35 can go to space. Yeah. Maybe that's where it is.
And then my second question is, I thought, aren't planes still equipped with black boxes? And those black boxes are basically indestructible and have a beacon on them that goes off if they're ever, you know, out and they use that beacon to find the black box. Am I wrong?
Well, it can be. Yeah. And apparently
that beacon is the transponder.
Yeah. The transponder beacon.
One of them.
And it would, if it's shut off and disabled, which is what, according to multiple sources, this transponder was not working. Off, not working, switched off. What the hell's going on? The most advanced aircraft in the world. Now, one last piece on this that I haven't heard anyone talking about is the wingman. Where was the wingman? Why was he flying alone? Or at least, perhaps he was flying alone?
No, now, in fact, reports did say that he was flying with the wingman after he ejected, the wingman was like, okay, you're good, and went back to base.
Exactly. So here's what the Air Force says on their website. Here's what the Air Force says about this. As a fighter pilot, you never fly alone. Never. The term wingman is not just a phrase. It's a specific term that means so much more than IFF and carries a lot of responsibility in the world of aviation. But you never fly alone. Now, a Marine Corps pilot told me today that they always fly with at least one wingman, unless they're on some sort of a training mission. But it's incredibly rare that you wouldn't fly with a wingman in a section, right? With two aircraft or four. The wingman would have been the one to communicate with the ready room and explain that the other aircraft was damaged or out of control. The wingman would have presumably tracked that aircraft, followed it, and even eliminated the aircraft in the air so that it wouldn't land in a civilian population. That's what the wingman would do, being radioing back and making sure that everyone at base knew what was happening. Again, this comes from a Marine Corps pilot, highly decorated Marine Corps pilot. Again, where was the wingman? So according to the Joint Base Charleston, there was a wingman, but he turned around and landed safely. Really? Did he? There's some people questioning whether or not that happened. What's the name of that wingman? Why don't you release that information? They won't release the name of this pilot, this other wingman who landed.
Media reports are just that the pilot ejected, the other guy turned around, and that was it, right after the ejection. That's highly unusual protocol, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And even if you're tailing someone not in the air, right?
Let's say we're carpooling to school and like you're following me and I see you get into an accident.
Then I'm like, oh, that's, yeah. I'm going to go back home then.
Too bad for her and her kids. Hope they make it. Well, I got to go back home.
Yes.
Forgot the toaster might be on.
This is highly irregular, you guys.
So the U.S. Marine Corps has just issued a 2-day stand down order for all aviation units, both inside and outside of the U.S., following the disappearance of an F-35 warplane. Now, according to ABC News, their reasoning for it isn't known. They're not telling us why they're standing down all aircraft, not allowing U.S. Marine aircraft particularly to fly. Why? Why won't you tell us what this is about? But there are also reports tonight that the 178B operating system that powers the operating system, just like iOS on your iPhone or Android on your Android device, the operating system that runs these aircraft, the F-35, the F-22, the F-16, and the B-2, and it also powers the Airbus A380, that operating system has leaked, according to reports tonight, meaning that hackers may have access to the operating system through some kind of an exploit.
A zero-day exploit.
And of course, we saw immediately as the story was breaking concerns about this leak and concerns about hackers taking over these aircraft, which may explain why you have back on August 24th, you have the Marine Corps F-18 Hornet crashing near San Diego. What happened there? The pilot was killed. We still don't know what happened in that investigation. They still haven't released that information. As of today, we still don't know. Days later, a Marine Corps Osprey crashed in Australia. Are they all connected? Now this one suddenly falls out of the sky? We don't know. But we do know that there are concerns that this operating system has leaked and that there is a zero-day exploit for this. Now that could be a cover story, and that could be a false flag. Who hacked our nation's aircraft? Was it Putin? Oh, well, you know, Zelensky's arriving in town. Timing of this should be perfect. We'll be able to make a big announcement this week all over CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post that Russia hacked our aircraft. And therefore, we need to send more money to Ukraine in order to launch a continued war with Russia. That's the false flag.
Doesn't make sense either. Because they were all about, we can't say the date we're leaving Afghanistan because that puts us in a vulnerable position. But yet they can announce publicly that all of our planes are grounded and that our infrastructure has
been
hacked.
Right. No, that's an excellent point, which is you announce and then you put out a phone number to show how weak we are. Like, we can't find our F-35. It's like falling out of the sky. And oh, there was an Osprey crash in Australia last week. And these things come in threes, don't they? We have the San Diego F-18 crash. We have the Osprey crash. Now we have this F-35 crash. Like, all of our aircraft are affected. And then the U.S. Marines say we're grounding our aircraft. And Zelensky's arriving in Washington, D.C.
oh, maybe this is like, you know, I would have let you borrow the car, but it's in the shop, right? I would have let you have these F-35s. You don't want them right now.
Well, yeah, they're not getting our F-35s. I can tell you that. They're going to get our old jalopies.
Right. And you don't want those either because that's on an older operating system.
But it's not even that. It's, oh, we are now in it with you, Zelensky. We are now in it with you in a much bigger way than we anticipated. Russia has taken things to the next level and they've attacked our aircraft. And what if they try to bring down a commercial airliner? What if now they try to go after our Airbus A380s? What will Russia do next? Right? The false, I just feel it. I mean, I'm telling the same question, everything, because it smells awful to me.
And the thing is, like, so let's say it was a Russian hack. Let's just run with that narrative. The stupidest way to do that would be to reveal before, when you're not actually actively at war with somebody, right, to reveal that you've hacked their systems to give them plenty of time to fix that. You would keep that to yourself.
But these guys are not too smart.
Find out at the most critical moment. Yeah.
Right.
You know, these guys are not too smart. And we've already caught them in, a number of lies. I mean, you know, again, you try to pretend that Assad is gassing his own people. And then, you know, takes a little while. We figure out the truth. Seymour Hersh publishes a story today on the Syrian gas attack. And, well, he uncovered some documents which totally show that that was a false flag. So they have a history of these false flags, guys. Like, and people, you know, in liberal media can say, oh, they're just conspiracy theorists. But we have repeatedly shown you how they've lied to us, and we've repeatedly uncovered the truth. And it once started out as a conspiracy theory, and now we know that it's the truth. I'm just saying, be very aware of what's happening here. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, they say, like, I think it is the truth that they want, though. It's like, I think that that's exactly what they know they can spin this, and it fits their narrative to get more people on board with a war or whatever. And people buy into it, enough people buy into it that they can continually get away with it because they keep getting away with it. So I think that it's not ignorance. I think this is that it makes them actually smart because they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Right. And we were warmed to it with the opening scene of Mission Impossible 3, 4. Which one was it?
7, 8. The most recent one. Whatever the most recent one
came out this summer. That's literally the opening plot is like war machine hacked. Right.
Yeah, it's the idea of like a hacking of, you know, and using it as a false flag, right? Using it to instigate a war.
So often we see these sort of parallels of like art parallels life than when it comes to war rhetoric. When we see like the bad guy is the bad guy of the day in the 80s, we had so many movies where the bad guy was Iranian or what have you, right? So here we go. We've been shown something like this in a fictional warm-up.
So let me know what you guys think of this in the chat below. I mean, am I way off here? I'm just questioning it all, right? We're not getting the answers. And there's a lot of really, really smelly things here when you look at the sophistication of the F-35.
Right.
And protocol within the military and where the wingman is and how all and the backup systems, the redundancy systems, and why would the transponder be turned off and all of these things that we're not getting answers to. Plus,
we don't want to be dragged into war collectively. We should want that, right? And we don't want to think that we're doing things that make fighter pilots unsafe. Period.
Yeah.
Like we don't want to think that we're doing things that might endanger civilians. Those are all things we don't want. So we need more answers to make sure that these collective undesirables are being avoided.
Also, the fact that this is a massive boondoggle, $5 trillion disaster that is the F-35 program. Months ago, I did a whole deep dive on how this is a boondoggle in front of Congress and absolute disaster. How is this thing even allowed to still go forward? But that's, you know, the United States military defense system for you. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at the next coup in Africa. CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies that will rule all of you, are members of Congress about to say enough is enough and try to put a ban on CBDCs? We'll show you who the brave individuals are who might be standing up against those CBDCs. We'll get there in a moment.
All right, but first we want to tell you about a way to help if you have problems sleeping at night, like Clayton did last night because he all of a sudden became a talkie mon right at bedtime. And we had to calm him down. A great way to do that is with Magnesium Breakthrough. You may have heard that magnesium is a great way to calm your mind and calm your body when you're having problems going to sleep, or say you fall asleep and then you wake up and your mind is racing. That's just kind of goes with the territory of adulting. But a lot of times if you go to a sleep aid that you find in, let's say, the drugstore or a Costco, you're going to be so groggy the next day. But that does not happen with Magnesium Breakthrough. Ever since we started adding Magnesium Breakthrough to our nightly routine, we really have been able to get even better sleep, and you don't wake up with that groggy hangover feeling. Magnesium Breakthrough, unlike other magnesium supplements that might be giving you just one or two forms of magnesium, instead contains all seven forms of magnesium designed to help calm your mind and help you fall asleep and stay asleep and wake up refreshed. Not only does it help you sleep better, it also helps calm your mind and allows you to feel grounded and relaxed during the day, and especially during right before bed. In addition to experienced relaxed sleep, Magnesium Breakthrough also helps improve digestion, supports muscle recovery, and supports healthy bone density. Most magnesium supplements are proven to be ineffective because, again, they only contain one to two forms of magnesium instead of the all seven that Magnesium Breakthrough contains. So don't miss out on the most relaxing sleep ever with Magnesium Breakthrough. For an exclusive offer for our listeners only, go to magbreakthrough.com/redacted. You see it there on your screen, magbreakthrough.com/redacted, and you'll save 10% off your order. Use the promo code redacted at checkout. Again, this is an exclusive offer for just our listeners. It's magbreakthrough.com/redacted. Use the promo code redacted and you'll save 10% at checkout. All right.
All right. Yes. And if you do subscribe to the channel, we're live at 4 p.m. Eastern time here today. Good to see all of you guys. If you're live, if you subscribe right now to the channel, your name will pop up here on the big screen. So please subscribe. And if you would be so kind, please smash that like button, because what it does is while we're live, it actually pushes us further out into the algorithm. And, you know, YouTube loves to suppress the content of this channel and channels like us. And of course, they've just gone on a spree of doing this recently with independent media channels. They really want you to be able to just tuning into CNN on YouTube, just watching MSNBC, just watching the main media networks on YouTube. That's really, really what they want. So we need to fight for independent media and journalists that aren't paid for by the biopharmaceutical complex or defense contractors or anybody else. So thank you guys for subscribing and smashing that like button.
All right. Well, should Congress ban CBDCs, or do you like the idea of the federal government as your bank telling you what to do with your money?
I vote no. I don't want a CBDC. Okay. I don't want them telling me what I can buy, my carbon credits.
We're going to tell you a little bit more about what a CBDC could do, a central bank digital currency, and exactly how scary it could be. But there is at least some adults in Congress. A representative from Minnesota, Tom Emer, proposed a ban on CBDC this Sunday. This is a bill that would halt the federal government from using the central bank digital currency. Here is the bill. We're going to show it to you, but first we're going to show him discussing it. It's called the CBDC Anti-Surveillance Act. Watch.
The Central Bank Digital Currency Anti-Surveillance State Act, which puts a check on unelected bureaucrats and ensures that the United States digital currency policy upholds our values of privacy, individual sovereignty, and free market competitiveness. Recent actions from the Biden administration have made it clear that they are not only itching to create a digital dollar, but they're willing to trade Americans' right to financial privacy for a surveillance-style CBDC. This bill ensures the future of crypto is in the hands of the American people, not the administrative state. By prohibiting the Federal Reserve from creating a tool with unfettered insight into Americans' financial data. If not open, permissionless, and private, like cash, a CBDC is nothing more than a CCP-style surveillance tool that can be weaponized to oppress the American way of life. We're not going to let that happen. Not on House Republicans' watch. And I want to thank the Financial Services Committee for considering our bill this month. And we're going to continue working to ensure that the digital economy is designed by Americans and emulates American values. And I return it to the...
Way to go.
Right. He's not wrong. What he's saying here is that cryptocurrency should not be owned by governments. This is a distinction I think missed by most people, and it's an important one. CBDC is not a blockchain, is not a cryptocurrency. By definition, a cryptocurrency has to be unregulated, untraceable, and outside of the control of a government. A CBDC is the opposite of that. It's like day and night, right? And so I think some people think, oh, Bitcoin, this is cool. Is this like a dollar Bitcoin? Like it, I'm in. No, that's wrong. That's wrong think. This is the opposite. Governments have used the popularity of crypto to pretend like, hey, we got one too. A CBDC is just a more controllable dollar, higher taxable, and it's much worse for you. I'm going to show you why in a second. So let's just think for a moment what history tells us happens when the government gets involved in an industry. When a government realizes, oh, people like this idea of cryptocurrency, let's do it ourselves. Let's think. Government housing, did that go well when the government decided to provide housing? No. That's why we call it the projects, right? That's a negative term. It's a pejorative for housing no one really wants to live in, because it did not go well. Student lending, well, big banks got out of that years ago, and now interest rates on student loans are just as high or higher than credit cards, because that's a predatory system now that it's federal, right? So why would we think that the government would take the reins of crypto and it would go well for us, especially the United States government, which has squandered its responsibility as the holder of the global currency? We made that point when Carol Roth joined us 2 weeks ago. Now, one of the things that protects us from the Fed directly controlling our money right now is that the Fed is not the bank, thankfully, right? So the IRS can't just say, you owe this much in taxes, I'm going to take it. They can't say, you've done something wrong, I'm going to close your bank account. I mean, they do now through social media, so they have that sort of extra layer. But the fact that the bank is not the Fed protects us in a way that would go away. The CBDC Anti-Surveillance Act that's being introduced says they can't do that. They cannot do that. Here's what they wrote, is that it prohibits the Federal Reserve from creating or serving individuals as a bank, basically. The Federal Reserve Bank shall not offer products or services directly to an individual, maintain an account on behalf of an individual, or use a CBDC or any digital asset directly attached to an individual. So think of this, you guys, your IRS account is the bank. Now, this is a nightmare. If you've ever had any question for the IRS and you've tried to call them or get a hold of them, think of the IRS acting as your bank, and you have a double charge, you're mischarged on something, you don't know where the F your money is gone. You can call nobody.
Wait a minute, but they hired 4,000 new IRS people to answer, or maybe it was 2,000, to answer the phones last year, remember 2 years ago. And I remember you being on the phone with the IRS all day. You left it on hold. You literally sat there and left it. And you showed me the amount of time that you were on the phone, and it was like something ridiculous. It was hours long phone call. And when you finally got through to somebody, they like hung up on you.
Yeah.
After like hours of waiting. So that's who you want to run your bank?
They would be the bank holding your account, right? So that in and of itself is terrifying, because the United States is not great at customer service when it comes to federal services. You probably know this as a taxpayer, but the idea that then they would use that to enact monetary policy is even more terrifying. One of the examples that Carol Roth gives in her book is, say you wake up, you have a big presentation to give, and then you go get in your car, and your car, you need gas, but you can't buy anymore because you've run out of credits for the week, and you need to get across town, but you're prevented from doing that because of all of this control, because you've used up whatever, you know, they can say how far you can go, how much meat you can eat, how much money you can spend on your kids, you know, taking extra, like if you're the kind of person who wants to buy your kids extracurricular math or whatever, and they say, you can't do that. All students must have equal education. You can't give your kid that unfair advantage. You can't use your money for that. Those are the ways that, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, have you ever seen the movie In Time with Justin Timberlake, where that society has time on their arm and they have to use those credits, and then they can go buy credits, and then everything they do costs more credits, and it's and when that timer runs out, they die.
No.
I mean, that was a movie from like the 2000s, and that's basically what this is. I mean, you're going to die, but you'll be without things if you run out of credits.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. You see it in China, right? You see people being, you know, they don't have access to certain things because of certain social credit score tabulations.
Right.
And how are you going to get that back? Like, how are you going to like work with them to like improve that? You know, if there's an error or something, and to your point earlier, but is it like some sort of training program? Like YouTube has like a training program. Like if you've got like a community strike, like you've said something nefarious about, COVID or something like that, like we'll remove the strike if you go through our specialty like training program.
Well, what will happen is there would be underground barter systems, just like the Hunger Games, where Katniss Everdeen knows how to hunt squirrels and can sell those on the black market because you are not otherwise supposed to have more food than you're rationed.
Oh, you mean corruption? Yeah, they wouldn't do anything corrupt.
Right. Okay. So here's something else that will make you take pause. If you are the kind of person who enjoys interest rates on the money that you put in the bank, well, you can kiss that goodbye. Here's something that Carol Roth found in her most recent book. She has a whole chapter on CBDCs. And she points out that currently banks make money on payment systems by lending out deposits and earning interest. But because a CBDC is held in a digital wallet, it can't be lent out to borrowers. So banks would not have the ability to pay you interest. In fact, you'd have to pay the bank to hold your money. You would have to pay for that account. There would be no more consumer interest payments because that system would go poof. It just, the math doesn't work out. So not only would you have an account held by the government, which is total shit at customer service, won't ever answer your calls, could take your money freely if they don't agree with how much tax you've paid, can control your behavior and enact monetary policy, you won't make any money in an interest-bearing account because that system will be gone as well. And guess who else wants to help governments control CBDCs? The World Economic Forum. This is on their page. They're offering up a consortium to help govern digital currency. No thanks. This is the unelected Davos bros trying to tell elected governments how to create monetary policy. One person who's been warning about this is Michael Yeadon. He's the former vice president of Pfizer, who has spoken out on his views about CBDCs. Listen to what he says about how this is connected to the World Economic Forum agenda.
It is a murderous attack on humanity. It starts above the level of nation. That's why the lockdown stuff was the thing that leapt at me. It's not in any country's pandemic plan. And yet they all did it at the same time. It's there. That's where it's coming from. Above us, above the nation. What they're going to do next, I promise you, I just know it. They're going to impose a digital ID on everybody. Decline it. You do not need it. They need you to have it. Decline it. What else have they got cooking? Central bank digital currencies. Yes, it's very different from your bank card because it's a real-time transaction that looks for where you are and what you're buying before it says yes or no. Your current bank card only asks, have you got the money? So when they introduce central bank digital currencies, they'll tell you that, oh no, well, cash will run alongside it. No, I'm confident they're going to find a way of removing cash. Now, this is going to involve you in inconvenience, just like declining digital ID is going to involve you in inconvenience. I think they plan to take digital tyrannical control of everybody.
When he says you don't need it, they need you to have it. What Carol Roth says about that is a solution in search of a problem. that will be sold to you. Yes, under the guise of a convenience. She makes this great point. She says, how can we expect the same people who didn't see historic inflation coming and the impacts of ginormous money printing efforts would be able to identify all the risks of a digital currency? These are the same people who have consistently debased the dollar. Now they want to be entrusted with more centralized control over the monetary system. That's like giving the whole class project to the F student.
Right.
And we should not sign off on that. I'm going to end with this from a parody account for comedian Louis C.K. This is not the actual comedian. He says that, okay, let's just switch all currency to Bitcoin or anything with a finite amount. No more money printing allowed. Just imagine if the government could not send money to other countries for endless wars unless we cut something else because money was finite. Not because they didn't want to, but because we were out of money to spend. The only way to get more money would be to take it from the American people on their taxes. I bet we would all take voting a little more seriously if our representatives had to be responsible with our money for once and couldn't overspend it without it coming out of our pockets. You know, the parody there, okay, we get it. It's not that funny. But it is happening. It is coming out of our pockets. And it will do that with a CBDC. It will come out of our pockets even more. So let us know what you think of this. If you like the idea, do nothing. If you don't like the idea, tell your local representatives to support this. Again, it's called the CBDC Anti-Surveillance Act. Let them know that you are for it.
And I should mention that Janet Yellen yesterday came out. She was interviewed about the debt ceiling. Because by the way, overnight we hit $33 trillion in national debt, the United States. So congratulations, the U.S. Overnight, you hit a new record, $33 trillion. And the interest payments on that debt alone, nearing $1 trillion. So just think about, you know, paying interest on your credit card at 22% or 21% of these credit card companies do it to you. But $1 trillion just on the interest alone on $33 trillion of debt. She said, though, we're fine. Our economy's healthy. Don't worry about it. We're all good. And then tomorrow, Jay Powell speaking. And we're going to find out about these interest rates and where inflation's going. So they want to continue to print money. They want to control that, and they want to control you. And don't worry about this fake money. It doesn't really exist anyway. Damn. All of it's fake. Coming up here on the show, we're going to talk about Africa, because where will the United States invade next? Where will the UK and France try to destabilize next? Can you guys vote in the chat now? Name an African country where you think we are going to invade or destabilize next, because we have some warning signs about this. Dan Cohen is going to join us to talk about where we are going to invade or destabilize next in Africa. And we're going to talk about the EU, and the EU just dropping kind of a bombshell on farmers. What is going on in Europe as it relates to the farmers? We're going to tell you. It might actually really surprise you. We'll get to that in a second. But first, are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 16 free stocks right now? Of course you would. You'd like to get up to 16 free stocks. You can do that with our friends over at Moomoo. With Moomoo, our favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface. It's easy to use. And even if you never do anything else with the account, just open the account, make your initial deposits, get your free stocks, and let them sit there and grow. It's like opening a free, like a savings account where you just, you know, hang on to it and then let these stocks grow. And right now they're giving away a free Google or Tesla stock when you open up your account and make your initial deposits. So even if you put a few hundred bucks in there and just let it sit there, you can trade like a pro, get access to these free stocks, and then sell them. You can sell them for cash and put them back in your account and do whatever you want with it. You don't have to continue to use it. You don't have to continue to buy stocks. You can do whatever you want. But they have zero commission trades. The app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. They can help you trade with its advanced tools, like their stock screeners. It's so nice. Open your free account today. Get access to zero commission trades, 16 free stocks, and trade like a pro with our friends at Moomoo. Again, you have to go to this website, though. You have to use this URL, redacted.inc/Moomoo. One more time. It's redacted.inc/Moomoo. Well, which African country will the United States lose its grip on next, or Western powers lose their grip on next? We've seen a number of coups in Africa over the past year to year and a half. We've saw Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso. So which African country will be the next to fall and the United States will be scrambling to steal their resources, perhaps invade that country? Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen is with us and has some thoughts on this. Dan, great to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Clayton. I mean, you know, I'm not going to speculate. I've been looking at the U.S. government and think tank apparatus's own policy papers, which shed some light on where they think there might be some kind of coup revolution, something that removes more African countries out of the grip of the U.S., France. So I've been looking at a piece of legislation called the Global Fragility Act, the Global Fragility Act, which is basically what it sounds like. The U.S. is very worried that these countries are fragile, and it's seeking to secure control of countries that it sees as susceptible to Russian and Chinese influence, which is basically Washington speak as ripe for coup d'etats and revolutions that might bring to power leaders that are looking for an alternative to the U.S. program of permanent war and pillaging. So Congress passed the Global Fragility Act back in 2019 under the Trump administration as part of its national security strategy, all about countering Russia and China. So that act directed the government to come up with some kind of plan. And last year, earlier in 2022, the Biden administration announced its strategy to implement the Global Fragility Act, called the U.S. Strategy to Prevent Conflict and Promote Stability. So this strategy lists several countries as test cases, the first of which is Haiti, which, of course, we have extensively covered here at Redacted. I just came back from Haiti and we'll be airing reports from the ground there. But it also focuses on several other countries. It names Libya in Northern Africa, which, of course, the U.S. destabilized with a NATO war in 2011. And Libya continues to be a disaster. We have Mozambique and Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea, of course, not in Africa. But it focuses heavily on coastal West Africa. And that includes the countries of Guinea, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo, and Benin. So those five countries. So notice on this map, all of those countries border Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, the countries that recently removed themselves from U.S. and French orbit. So the U.S. fully understands that this region is ripe for change and is extremely worried about it, so much that they've crafted a huge plan from preventing this from happening. Now, according to the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the premier think tank in Washington and has been for many decades, the CFR's paper on the Global Fragility Act in coastal West Africa, quote, several factors put the coastal West African countries at risk of political volatility, intercommunal and criminal violence, and armed conflict. Political leaders in coastal West Africa have yet to establish popular and consistent norms of political behavior necessary for legitimacy and stability. Their economies are unable to meet the collective needs of populations that are doubling roughly every 20 to 30 years and are increasingly young. It adds that, as has been the pattern in the broader West African region in the past 60 years, these factors often converge in unique ways that can rapidly disrupt prolonged periods of equilibrium and apparent stability, and says that uneasy relationships between state and society persist for many people, especially in politically and economically marginalized regions or social groups. Basically, it goes on and says public rallies in support of recent coups in Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali underscore this disillusionment. So according to the Council on Foreign Relations, there have actually been rallies in support of those coups in Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso in at least some of the countries the U.S. is worried about. And all of them, except Ghana, all of those countries that I listed, except for Ghana, are Francophone. They speak French, so they understand the statements of these new leaders, of these revolutionary figures. They don't have any trouble understanding them. So then The question is, what is the U.S. planning? Well, here's what one State Department official said a few weeks ago.
Let me talk for a moment, though, about Coastal West Africa, the region with which we are partnering, where we're working with five countries. We have a number of objectives in the Coastal West Africa region. We're looking to build social cohesion, to advance responsive governance, to create stronger, more responsive and accountable security forces in at-risk communities.
So Western stability, cracking down on crime, let us do it. Let Western powers come in here and really set up a security force and show our influence so that we can really make sure that you guys are living up to our democratic standards. That's what I hear when I hear this giant sort of word salad. When Victoria Nuland travels through Africa and says the same things, or Suzanne Power travels around and says the same stuff, right? When she visits Hungary and makes these exact same statements, it's all like they're reading out of a word salad kid's book.
Yeah, it's the most vague language possible. And I really like how she tries to convey seriousness by furrowing her brow and concern, you know, like we're just friendly people from the State Department who want to help your country.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, just so you don't
we'll
really
help your country just like we are helping in Syria, where we're going to stand guard at your oil fields and make sure that your oil is protected and it's going to the right places that we steal it and take it to. You know, I couldn't help but thinking when you're showing this map of West Africa and thinking about the oil drilling and the massive oil fields that are right off the coast of West Africa, like oil hotbeds. You know, it's convenient that they're picking these particular places for, you know, we want to make sure that you're taken care of and we've got your back.
Right. Has nothing to do with pillaging resources, you know, right. Not to mention allying with, according to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, allying with Al-Qaeda in Syria. They would never do that in Africa, you know, in this fight against ISIS and jihadist groups. The U.S. would never do what it did in Syria there, right?
Right.
So we don't really get much from these, like, State Department officials, their appearances at these think tanks. They don't really say a lot, at least in what I've seen. But that CFR paper is somewhat revealing. It gives these recommendations. One of them, very revealing, says U.S. diplomacy, including White House involvement, convinced former Ghanaian President Jerry Rawlings and former Kenyan President Daniel Arap Moi to retire, open political space, and to allow for civilian democratic succession. And says both countries probably would have fallen into unstable trajectories had Rawlings and Moi not done so. So basically, they are openly saying that the U.S. in those two cases, in the early 2000s, the Bush White House told the president of Ghana and the president of Kenya to step down, which they did, to avoid, I guess, a revolution. So, I mean, is that kind of what the U.S. is looking at in these coastal West African countries? And when I look at the case of Gabon, where a notoriously corrupt U.S. puppet, Ali Bongo, was recently ousted from power, but his regime is still intact, is that just what happened a couple of weeks ago? Was the Biden administration, okay, obviously not Biden himself, but were Biden officials involved there? Like Bush officials, you know, were decades ago. I think we have to wonder that.
Yeah, I think you're right in wondering that. And again, not to be a cynical bastard here, but when I hear that all of these countries you named, Ghana, Gabon, right, on your list, even though not on this most recent list of the Fragility Act, but Ivory Coast, you might as well throw Senegal in there. All of these countries right there, Angola could be, you know, we'll see what the Portuguese have to say about that. But again, you have this influence and you have this, all of these new oil discoveries in the past year to year and a half, all off the coast of these countries. You have the new Afina discovery from Ghana. You have this new Baleen discovery off of the Ivory Coast. All of these massive multi-billion barrel oil discoveries right at a time when you have China buying up way more oil coming from Europe and coming from Russia, and you have Saudi Arabia making these oil deals with China. You have to wonder if the timing of all of this isn't suspect.
Right. And then there's, you know, you have to wonder about the military component. So the CFR's next recommendation says that ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, espouses values and norms that align with GFA principles and could serve as a forceful diplomatic partner for the United States. So, like, I like that language of forceful diplomacy that aligns with, you know, with GFA goals, meaning USA goals. So the Global Fragility Act explicitly says that it has a strong military component. The Pentagon is heavily involved, and it kind of relies on the sort of Obama doctrine of secret military forces of special ops being deployed rather than the old, you know, Bush doctrine of massive forces. So, I mean, you know, we had ECOWAS recently threatening to invade Niger, which it set this deadline and has apparently passed it. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, the piece goes on and on, gives more recommendations, but you get the point. I mean, the U.S. is very concerned about coastal West Africa, the general region where people are Francophones, the government is weak, or as the U.S. states, fragile, and they see this revolutionary change sweeping the region because people are extremely tired of this never-ending fight against ISIS and jihadist groups that never actually really achieves anything, and they see probably as a pretext for Western presence and Western invasion, and the conditions they live in continue to be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely, the United States absolutely does not want these African countries, Ghana, Gabon, Senegal, the Ivory Coast, to turn into the next Norway because of their own oil-rich resources, can become one of the wealthiest and most prosperous countries in the world. With oil, that's exactly what happened in Norway in 1969 when they discovered oil, went from being basically an irrelevant country, you know, poor by all, you know, by today's standards, becoming one of the wealthiest and most prosperous and highest life expectancy, free healthcare. People don't leave the country. They don't travel. They stay there after they graduate college in Oslo. It's like, imagine that happening to Africa. The United States absolutely cannot allow that to happen, cannot allow Africa to become prosperous. They'll do whatever they can to keep that from happening. I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry I'm so cynical, but I just, I'm so sick of it that, and I love what you said at the beginning, which is, we're not going to speculate. I'm not going to speculate which countries are going to be the next. I'm just going to literally read right from their own papers, and they're telling us where they're going to do it. They're literally giving us the blueprint, are they not?
Yeah, I mean, those, you know, they say those five countries, I think you're Guinea, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo, and Benin. Those are the five countries that they list, and again, they all border Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. So, and all except Ghana speak the same language. And the U.S. says they're in kind of similar conditions. Of course, each one has their own unique political dynamics and everything else. But there's obviously a common thread, so much that the U.S. is very worried about their stability under whatever regime. So, I mean, I'm calling it here, you know, just, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it does, you know, here at Redacted, we saw it coming because we were paying attention.
Yeah. Reading their own documents, you know, it's like going through Pfizer's own documents. It's right there in black and white. We'll see it. Dan Cohen, great to see you. Thank you so much for this. Fascinating.
Thank you.
It's crazy, but it is. I mean, it's like they literally print the documents. So like, here are the countries we think have some issues and, well, you know what? We're probably going to have to invade them just to make sure that they're safe, and we'll protect their oil in the meantime. We'll take all their oil and all the resources, sure, and protect them.
We really need to work on our bedside manner,
right?
Like that's not how you check and see if a democracy is doing well, by bombing the shit out of them and then going to see how things are.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we love to do. Now we're going to do a deeper dive on this, like exactly what we've done in, you know, Libya, and like how destabilized that country has become as a result of it. And we, you know, arguably NATO ended up killing 15,000 people in the past few days thanks to the flooding, and because we totally destroyed their infrastructure. That's how all these people died. So way to go, President Obama. Good job. Good job killing all those Libyans. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about how the EU just kind of dropped a bombshell on these farmers and could be maybe...
And said, maybe we're wrong about green policies. Maybe it's hurting people.
Yeah, we'll tell you what they said in just a moment. But first... You know, tomorrow's a big day. So tomorrow we have the FOMC meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So Jay Powell about to speak. Yeah, Janet Yellen over the past 24 hours talking about, oh, the economy's fine. Don't mind the fact that we're $33 trillion in debt. And it's fine to keep your money in the U.S. dollars. Well, over the past, if you've been watching our show for any length of time, you know that Natalie and I have been moving out of the U.S. dollar into hard assets like gold and silver and real estate. We've been doing that for many, many years. And we just doubled down. We just bought a whole bunch of silver recently. And we bought a bunch of gold a few months ago, but most recently silver, because silver prices have been so cheap, right? It's been so affordable. Right. And we've been seeing the writing on the wall, like what's happening in the economy and the need to shift our wealth away from the U.S. dollar and into hard assets like gold, silver, and real estate.
Right. It's hard to move away from what you were taught at school. Right. You know, I went to USC. You're taught to save, you know, depend on some interest rates, invest in the stock market, max out your retirement plans.
Yeah.
That was fine in an economy where our social contract was good. The dollar was strong. The U.S. was politically and militarily strong. But now, you know, the world being what it is, everyone has to figure out what to trade with because the United States dollar has been so debased.
Well, yeah. And then, of course, when Nixon took it off the gold standard, I mean, that's the moment, right? In the 1970s, right, when it's taken off the gold standard. So the U.S. dollar is not backed by, it's not backed by gold, it's not backed by anything anymore. It's backed by debt, which we're really good at. $33 trillion in debt is where we're at right now. $33 trillion in debt. And if professors had actually taught us this years ago that, hey, maybe we need to put your money in hard assets, if we would have learned this when we were in school, like how to take care of your wealth and actually build wealth the right way, you know, then we could have actually planned ahead for it. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have been asking me, like, where do I get gold? Where do I get silver? Where can I invest? And our friends over at Lear Capital can help you do that. They provide free education material so you can learn what it's like to invest in gold, in hard assets like silver, and actually understand how to transfer a portion of your IRA or your 401k into gold and silver. They do it all for you. So we recommend you get a call set up with them. It's totally free. Just book a call with these guys. Their 1-800 number is right here on your screen. Go to 1-800-613-3557. Or go to LearRedacted.com and get their free IRA guide. Ask them questions. They're great to talk to. Learn how to gold and silver can help protect you and your families, your hard-earned wealth. Even if you just transfer a portion of your money that you have in a savings account into gold or silver. And when you call or go online, find out how also you can qualify for up to $15,000 in bonus gold or silver. Don't procrastinate, guys. I'm telling you. Right now, as we're seeing where inflation is going and what they're doing to the U.S. dollar, now is the time to set up a call with these guys. 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. That is the place to go.
Has Europe realized that attacking farmers is maybe a bad idea as consumer prices go up? EU Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen is going to give a State of the Union to European Parliament this week and possibly make some reforms to environmental regulations that were previously proposed. This, according to the Financial Times. These things have been unequivocally hurting both farmers and consumers. Here to discuss it is Ralf Schollheimer, who has been covering the attack on farmers. He joins us from Europe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me again, Natalie. It's always great to be on with you.
Indeed. So these are so-called green reforms, which have ended up increasing prices for both farmers, and that is passed on to the consumers. So can you give us some background about these policies and how they have played out, pretty much how experts have warned?
Yes, I mean, in many ways, this is just yet another consequence of Europe's failed energy policies. I mean, as most people have probably heard over the last couple of days, that crude oil prices are going up, diesel prices are going through the roof, and even though it might be counterintuitive at a first glance, but this has a direct impact on your food prices, because we completely underestimate, and unfortunately we also teach our children that anymore, that the modern agriculture, modern transportation system, getting food grown, getting food planted, getting food harvested and getting it to the supermarket needs lots and lots of energy, particularly diesel, particularly fossil fuels. And as we have made or pursued policies that led to a rise in prices of fossil fuels, these prices are now gradually passed on to the consumer. And this is what we see now happening.
And so, you know, one of the things that they say they may roll back is this ban on killing baby chicks one day after they're born. Now, obviously, they're telling us this as sort of like pull on the heartstrings, like, oh, it's too bad that this isn't working. And now the baby chicks will be like literally the most vulnerable thing you can think of is what they're using to tell us will be rolled back. But none of the farmers are saying, oh, yes, we do want to, you know, hurt the earth and animals, so that's what we want. This comes from a fundamental lack of understanding of agriculture, don't you think?
No, it absolutely does. I mean, this is another story I think we kind of have to retell in the way we have the narrative, which is that in many ways, human survival has always been something that we wrestled from nature. I mean, I would not say it's a conflict with nature, but from mining to, you know, making fire to agriculture, this always meant that the areas where these things take place, we changed nature. However, the good news are, and we never talk about the good news, we have become so efficient and successful in the areas where we do those things that we can afford to leave other areas untouched, or let's say they're more natural conditions. But of course, everything in politics is a trade-off. So it means if you want to feed your population, if you want to allow people to have affordable food prices, then you will have to do agriculture. And we should not underestimate this. One of the greatest accomplishments of humanity over the last 200 years was the ability to grow and produce food at a level that allows people to have higher living standards, spend money on other things than just food. And yet kind of we ended up in a situation where now obesity is a form of poverty. I mean, whether this is a good or a bad thing is a separate topic, but the point is it's an accomplishment. We should not go to war with the people that make our food. We should not go to war with the agricultural sector. I think this is once again another piece of the puzzle that we also see in the energy sector, which is kind of this self-defeating European masochistic cult where we try to undermine everything that made modern life and modern civilization possible.
Right. We have chickens in our house, and we are always afraid when we go on vacation that the eggs will turn into chicks and we'll get more roosters. Like, it's untenable. There has to be a way in order to avoid having a whole herd of roosters. And so people who are screaming about these kind of things are usually green activists who have no understanding of agriculture whatsoever. And so now the European Union is saying we have to do things that the green activists may not like. Do you think that means that maybe the tide is turning for the appetite of who to listen to?
Well, I think the tide is turning because, as my friend Doomberg uses to say, in the battle between physics and platitudes, physics is undefeated. And I think this is a little bit what we see now as well. Reality is reasserting itself. Now, I would argue that particularly in the West, we have been so rich in the past that we could afford to do lots of stupid things, but we are now not as rich as we were. So the stupid things come with a significantly higher price tag, and people start to feel this. So the big problem, of course, is that we have a political class and a media class that does not know how agriculture works. They don't know how the commodity sector works. They don't know how the energy sector works. This is why we have all these weird proposals that, you know, that organic farming is better than modern industrialized farming. They tried this in Sri Lanka. I'm sure that most of your listeners and viewers know what happened in Sri Lanka, right? The country that decided to do only organic farming, and they turned from a food exporter to a food importer. And of course, then they had riots and the government got overthrown. Now we make the same argument in the energy sector. We say, oh, nuclear, right? Oh, gas, oh, coal, it's all bad. It's all going to be wind and solar. No, it's not going to work, right? They say we're going to have the oil-free economy. Just to give you a little glimpse into this, 6,000 different products that we use every day are made from crude oil. And only a small fraction of it is used for the production of electricity, about 3%. But right, renewables only make electricity, so they will never replace crude oil. But we are told, we are fed all these stories that just around the corner is this green utopia with these green jobs and green technology. None of this is going to happen. We have been promised this transition for 30 years. The German taxpayer has subsidized the renewables revolution, if you want to call it, with 320 billion euros. And now they have energy poverty. So this is, I think, where the shift is going to come, because politicians start to realize that this is not working. So they have two choices, right? Either they can continue this path and hoping that the miracle is materialized at one point. Don't think that's going to happen, right? They will then be voted out of office and replaced by other parties. And the second one is that gradually some parties, some political leaders will realize that you cannot defeat reality and adopt the programs accordingly. Unfortunately, at the moment, whether it's Joe Biden or Rishi Sunak or Olaf Scholz, I see no politician in the West, same in Australia, right, or Justin Trudeau in Canada, I see no politician who is 100% willing to realign themselves with reality. They do it gradually, like Canada is now coming out for nuclear. There is, I know, in Great Britain, there is a slight movement. Maybe we should do a little bit of oil and gas exploration, but it's very, very slow. And I don't think it's going to happen fast enough to avoid the coming crisis.
Yes, I was just reading Thame Gustafson's book, The Bridge, about the oil and gas industry, specifically in Germany, and how they were 30 years ago the leader in prosperity because of their willingness to make contracts with anybody that was good for the German people. And now they seem to just pick who gets to be prosperous and who doesn't. And, oh, it's the working class. Too bad. Your prices will go up by 15%. Hope you can handle that. Bye. So can you talk a little bit about these increased consumer prices and what is the appetite of politicians to even see it?
Yeah, and this is exactly goes to this, right? Because our conversation started with agriculture, and some viewers might wonder, well, why do you start with agriculture and then you kind of end up with oil and gas? And the reason is, as you already touched upon a little bit, because energy underwrites everything. I mean, this is, I cannot stress this enough, right? There is the only universal currency in the world we have is energy, because nothing gets done without it. I mean, let me just give you one number to again highlight this. The energy contained in a barrel of oil is the equivalent to 25,000 working hours. That's about, you know, that's almost a decade worth of manual labor by an average person. So these fossil fuels, that energy, that it does tremendous things for us. And it's not just, you know, cars. It's not just, you know, airplanes. Of course, it's also absolutely crucial in the production of fertilizer. And the fertilizer shortage, I think, is the next thing on the menu of crisis, right? It's needed, the diesel is needed for the tractors. It's needed for unbroken refrigeration change. It's needed to get the agricultural products to the supermarket. So if the prices for these things, for the basic energy input, go up, by default, the prices for consumers are going to go up. So it's ridiculous when, for example, Justin Trudeau in Canada says grocery stores need to lower prices for food. The grocery stores are not the ones that make the prices higher. They at some point have no choice. Because if everything along the production chain gets more expensive, in the end, it's going to hit the consumer. And it goes, I know this is tedious for your listeners, and I apologize for it, but it always goes back to the energy question. Like, you cannot be a rich society in an energy deficit. It's like trying to gain weight in a calorie deficit. That's very, I think it's almost impossible, but it's definitely very difficult. And it's the same with the economy. Sure, you can say, oh, we can be more efficient. Yes, you can do a little bit here and a little bit there. But overall, we are moving into a global condition of energy deficits, which means that food prices, transportation prices, healthcare prices, people completely underestimate how much energy is necessary to run a hospital. All of this is going to get more expensive. And redistribution is not going to cut it. I think this is the next most important message. So the idea is, oh, we just have it in a millionaire tax. That's not going to cut it, because you cannot print energy. So even if you take an additional billion from a billionaire, if there is not enough oil in the market, there is not enough oil in the market. The oil is going to get, you know, a billion more expensive. And this is so important for people to understand. And I think this is important for you and me and the media outlets like yours that are willing to talk about this, to always stress this. We are running over a cliff. We are, I would say, already over the cliff, like in the, you know, in the Looney Tunes cartoons where you know, Wile E. Coyote is kind of standing in the air for a couple of seconds until he realizes there is no ground beneath him before he falls down. We are kind of at that stage at the moment. So the falling down is going to come rather sooner than later, I would say.
And if you really do your studying about energy policy, you realize that progress, natural progress, usually takes care of the problems we're worried about. And so it's almost never government that solves it. So looking to the government to do it is a fool's errand. I want to ask you about this, though, because the bans that are currently being proposed in Europe would ban imports from trading partners like Brazil, Ukraine, and Thailand. Ukraine obviously is the linchpin here because they're saying they're already going to sue Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia over their ban on Ukrainian agriculture. So will the EU stand for this, Ukraine attacking some EU members, while also paying lip service towards supporting Ukraine, which Ursula von der Leyen always likes to do?
Well, this is going to be a kind of a showdown between the very, very influential agricultural lobby in Europe and the very, very strong pro-Ukraine lobby. And again, I make no moral judgment here. This is somebody everybody has to decide for themselves. But it shows once again that there are certain areas where countries, where nations are very sensitive. And food production, agriculture is one of those areas. I mean, even as you just mentioned, right, even Poland. And I think nobody was more steadfast in their support for Ukraine than the Poles. But even they say, no, our market is primarily and predominantly for our own farmers and for our own agricultural products, but not for those from Ukraine. And that shows you that on the long run, right, these national interests cannot that easily be overcome, which is understandable. I mean, to be very clear, from a consumer perspective, right, we probably would argue, open the market up, right? If you can get cheaper beef from Argentina and Brazil and cheaper grain from Ukraine, for us as consumers, that might be very positive. Of course, on the other hand, you would also say, do you really want to outsource your food production to someone else? Or is it maybe better to pay a slightly higher price, but at least then know if push comes to shove, your country can still produce enough food in a crisis to feed its own population? So that, as I said before, it's always a trade-off, right? This is always the big dilemma. It's always a trade-off. There are no perfect solution in politics. Very often it's the choice between bad, worse, and worst. Unfortunately, I think our politicians all too often choose the worst option and not the other two slightly less worse options.
Yes, so that they can say nice things from a pulpit and then not actually do their homework. So thank you so much for breaking this down for us today. You're always welcome on Redacted. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to do it for us here at Redacted. Thank you so much for watching us live. You remember that we are live every day, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1 p.m. Pacific. And you can catch the reruns whenever you'd like. Reruns, who uses that term anymore? Catch the reruns. You can catch the clips of individual pieces. Always let us know what you think in the chat. Like and share the video. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you here tomorrow, everyone. Bye-bye.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.